As a listener of this podcast, you know the devastating impact of narcissistic abuse, how it shatters your confidence, leaving you struggling in future relationships. But it doesn't need to be that way. Join me and experts Lisa Sunny and Rosanna Fay at the Strong and Unstoppable Retreat this October in beautiful Orlando, Florida. During this transformative four-day experience, you'll uncover the unconscious psychological blocks holding your recovery back. Through equine therapy, targeted workshops, and practical skill development, you'll uncover and overcome unconscious obstacles and reconnect with your inner strength. This retreat is specifically designed for women who are committed to their healing and ready to break free from the lingering effects of narcissistic abuse. Space is limited and spots are filling up, so don't miss this opportunity to invest in yourself and your future. Secure your spot by visiting wellnessrecoveryretreats.com. That's wellnessrecoveryretreats. Take your first step towards becoming strong and unstoppable today. Could your partner be controlling you and you not know it? Three states now have legal statutes about coercive control, and the UK have criminalized it. In this episode, Lisa and I talk about the subtleties of this devastating form of abuse, along with how to recognize if it's happening to you. This is Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse, and I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience. Each week, we're going to take a deep dive into the dynamics of narcissistic abuse. As a listener-supported podcast, thank you for considering becoming a subscriber for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Hey, Lisa, I want to do a shout-out to our sponsor as a big thank you, GetTheTea.com. They sent me Calm Tummy. That's what I've been taking lately, and it's been fabulous. I'm not on medications for GI upsetness, and I'm doing really well. I've been so pleased with Calm Tummy. So I just want to thank Get the Tea for being our sponsor, for believing in this cause, and also for helping my health. Okay, I didn't know that I was being controlled. In fact, I had never even heard. You're thinking, really? In psychology, you should not have heard of coercive control. Well, actually, domestic violence and that whole realm is a different segment of psychology. And that's not the graduate student's mainstay of education. You have to choose to be in that track to learn about the ins and outs of what happens in a violent situation. Even then, we didn't talk about narcissistic abuse. So there's a whole lot about abuse that is actually just sort of coming to light now. But I had never heard of coercive control. I now know that some states are trying to regulate it. UK has also criminalized it. But had you heard of it before? And if you had, would you have defined it?
I had never heard of it in my life. I felt like I knew about control. I knew what control was. And I was not in a controlling relationship at all. I knew that. And I was completely wrong because I was in a coercively controlling relationship. And, you know, I mean, you can look up a million definitions. It's like, you can cut your hair however you want, but you get punished if you cut it too short or dye it the wrong color. So control would be you cannot wear your hair short. Control would be you cannot go to your mother's house. You cannot see your friends. Coercive control is like you can go out with your friends and then he'll text you 42 times. Or you have to be that girl who's got your phone up on the table just in case he calls and you must answer. Or if you stay out too late, he accuses you of cheating or makes you feel bad or punishes you the next day. Or so you can have the quote unquote freedom to do what you want to do, but you are subtly, covertly punished in other ways or made to feel bad in other ways. I was like, I'm allowed to have friends and go to Starbucks and do what I want to do. But, you know, I was allowed to go to Starbucks, let's say, and allowed is kind of I'm choosing that word on purpose, but I was allowed to do these things, but I was in trouble when I did, subtly, nagged, poked fun at, belittled, but all in good fun, right? All was just joking. And then I'm too sensitive. So there was a lot of gaslighting that kind of went with that. And I think even when you look at the language sometimes that these certain abusers will use to say like, I let you have friends. I mean, just the fact that you're even wording it in that way, that says something.
It does. It does. Or I'm thinking of the example of a haircut. They may say, yeah, I'm not going to tell you what kind of haircut you can and cannot have. But when you go have your haircut done or even maybe colored, they'll come back and they say, well, I really like it when it was longer or I really like it when it was other color. So they'll let you know that they're not happy by putting this pressure on you so that you make a mental note of like, if I want that from them,
the next time I won't do this. I'll keep them happy. I'll just wear long or wear blonde or whatever it is that they want. Yeah, I didn't know either. Mine was super subtle. Mine wouldn't even present it. It was rarely strongly worded or suggested. It was more kind of, it happened. He would kind of care. Like, let's give an example. This is a typical thing that would happen. I made it clear early on that I was a 8+ night sleeper. I preferred most of my life to have 9 or 10 hours if I could. I could function on 8. I started to feel sick if I had less than 8. And thank God that's not true for me now, but it used to be true for me. So what he would do is he knew I liked him to have him around me. So he would keep the TV on, watching something in the bedroom, keep the volume up. And I would say, hey, I'm going to head to bed. And he would even turn his light off on his side, but he wouldn't change the volume on the TV. And he would continue watching whatever it was watching. And he would watch it for hours. He would watch it till maybe 2, 3 a.m. in the morning. And then he would set up meetings in the morning when he knew I'm always a person who prefers to have meetings starting at 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. He would start them at 9, 8:30 even, and he would set the alarm for 6 a.m.
Oh.
And he'd make sure it goes off over and over. And there's no reason we needed to get up at 6. Absolutely no reason. It wasn't like he was going out to work out or I was. He would just set the alarm for 6 a.m. So here he is. He's had the TV on till 3 or so. And then he's setting the alarm for 6 a.m. in the morning and he's running me on no sleep. Then we would run all day. We wouldn't stop for breakfast. We wouldn't stop for lunch. We literally go from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting and then finally stop. By then I was starving and we'd eat. And that would be like our one main meal of the day. And of course, it would be the meal he wanted because he would whine about food and how he had this preference and wasn't this way better? And shouldn't we all eat like this all the time? So my then diet became his diet. It was all of this subtlety. The same thing happened with money. He would say, you know, shouldn't I, even though it was my money, we're living off of my income, he would say, shouldn't I be the one that carries a paycheck? Doesn't it look worse to have a man not even have a credit card? Shouldn't I then be the one that carries cash? And then he would then start to do it. And of course, cash would go missing and things like that. So it was all this painted in this kind of sympathetic, poor me, or it looks better, or this is how we should do things. And I had no idea that he was setting the tone and the pace. And that he was also at the same time wearing me down and running me ragged and exhausted and sick because that this was a deliberate effort to keep me under control.
But you don't recognize it, you know? And I think that's the biggest sense of confusion for me was always in like, he's not controlling, therefore he's not abusive. Or prior to the physical abuse that eventually happened, it was like, he's not hitting me, so he's not abusive. There was all these rationalizations that I was kind of making in how he wasn't abusive, because what we think of as abuse, and I think the stereotype that is so prevalent in the world of what an abuser is a man, abuser is a blue collar worker, an abuser hits you, an abuser screams at you, he controls you. And
yes,
that exists. Sure. Abusers can be men or women. Abusers can be anyone of any class, any financial or economic background. They can be screaming at you or not screaming at you. They can hit you or not hit you. The stereotype is completely false. It didn't meet what I assumed for an abuser. And connected to that, I would never be a victim of abuse. I'm too smart. I'm from a better family than that. And I look back and what a gross opinion. I straight up acknowledge how completely wrong that is, because if it was about intelligence, I don't think any of us would be here. It's not about intelligence at all. But when you don't see it. And so part of why I'm so passionate about talking about it now is because I didn't know. And I hear over and over and over from clients and followers that they didn't know that it was abuse. And so educating people on topics like control versus coercive control so that you can really see the subtlety in the differences and the nuance in it so you can recognize it. But it's hard, you know? I mean, ultimately, coercive control is just, how can I control and dominate you and manipulate you without you knowing? It's this sort of slow, insidious, and it builds.
Yeah.
Thinking back to what I was saying about, you know, I was the woman with my phone on the table, face up. And rarely, but sometimes people would comment, like, do you need to be checking it? Or assuming that it's some like phone addiction that I have. It's not a phone addiction. It's a, if he calls me or texts me and I don't respond, in fairness, he never accused me of cheating, but it would be like, your friends are more important. You couldn't even do this one thing for me. I needed you. You're so selfish. And it just, it would make you not go out, or it would make me come home earlier, or it absolutely worked. I was completely controlled by that. I was driven by, what's his reaction going to be if I don't comply? If I'm not just, somehow I felt like he expected me to just know what he needed when he needed it in advance without any question. And if I didn't guess right, I was in trouble.
Mine was the same. I kept my phone face up and watching it. And he would do a different thing than that. He wouldn't say, where were you? Or the excuses that you heard. What he would do is he simply would not be available ever again for hours.
Ooh, yeah.
So if I missed that tiny little brief 5-minute window, I was then out for the next 8, 10, 12, maybe 24 hours.
Ooh.
And then, and he would only show up when he decided to show up. So if I texted, there was no reciprocity, no response. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what I could have said, the house is on fire, and he wouldn't respond until if and when he chooses to. So I knew it was completely always under his control. You make a really good point, though, and that is how often we make assumptions about what abuse is. One of the things that I always assumed about abuse, and this is why I didn't see it as coercive of control, is that it's done in anger or out of a threat. Uh-huh. And that it usually involves hostility, mm-hmm. like name calling. So when I just mentioned all these things, here's another really great example of how he got me good was, and it was so subtle. And I knew when it happened, what was happening. He had a particular type of soap he had to have and used. We had to keep it in the house. I actually don't care for the soap. It's okay. I don't have a problem with it, but I have a lot of allergies to soap. So I can't just use any soap. I could actually use the one he liked, but I didn't care for it. So what I would do is I would buy the more expensive homemade soaps because I don't have an allergy to them. Mm-hmm. So I would bring that here. We're living in Mexico, and it wasn't easy to get homemade soaps in Mexico at that time. Maybe it is now, but it wasn't at that time. So I would bring them in from the United States, and he happened to run out of the brand he liked. So he asked if he could borrow mine because we use different showers, which I always thought that was weird. Why do you need to use a different shower? I don't get that. But that was another way he just exerting controls, like, I need my space and I need to have my counter and I need to have, you know, so I like, whatever. But so he ran out and he was using my soap and I was looking for it back because most bars of soap in the United States run about, I don't know, $3, $4. This was like a $9 bar. And he said, I threw it away after like a few uses. I said, what? He goes, yeah, I didn't care for it and I don't need it anymore. So I threw it away. Oh, that was one more way for him to say, it's my way, all the way, all the time, my way. Your way doesn't count. You don't count. And I'm going to let you know you don't count by showing disregard for something that you've spent a lot, that we spend a lot of money to have in the house. Uh-huh. It was just that kind of subtlety. So I missed it because that wasn't done in hostility. There was no name calling. It wasn't like he threw the soap at me or even screamed about the soap. He just threw it away.
Yeah, it's...
And let me wonder if I, and then played the game of wondering whether or not I would notice so that when I did, he could say something. And then he would say, see, I gotcha.
That's the difference. You know, I was talking to a client earlier. She was asking me, are all narcissists just the same? And I always say to people, no, they are humans. I know people hate when I say that, but they are humans. I know we call them monsters and demons and evil and all the other things, but.
Right.
Abusers are human beings, and they, maybe there's some fundamental things at the root of what they're doing that's the same. And yeah, they all manipulate or gaslight, but some yell, some don't. Some are much more covert and don't. I definitely saw a bit more hostility, but it was always just sort of like a personality trait, if you understand. Like, it was just mm-hmm. who he was. He wasn't being hostile. It's just how he talks. So, you know, he owned a business and would ask me to run errands for the business. But he would do that when I had like a 1 and 2-year-old at home and it's 8 o'clock at night, they're in bed and you need me to run an errand like right now. And I even understand he actually did need it right at that moment, but it was like your lack of planning caused you to need this. You have a whole business with people and you want me to pull children out of bed and go do these errands at 8 o'clock at night. It's crazy. But if I wouldn't do it, he wouldn't yell at me. He would just be like, figures, I can't count on you. You never support anything I do. Slams the phone. It was such an unreasonable request, but I was made to feel like if you don't comply, if you don't do this, you're a bad partner. You're not good enough. You don't support me. So I would try to disprove him by supporting him by doing crazy things. And of course, on the outside, like what kind of person rips their children out of bed? I didn't do it very often, but there were times where I'm like, it's just easier to do it. It's just easier to comply.
Yeah. Did you ever come to the conclusion I'm being controlled? I never did.
Never.
It wasn't until it was all over and I look back and I think, wow, this person decided when I'd eat, what I ate, when I got to go to bed, when I got to wake up, even who was holding the money, how the money was being spent, when the appointment was being made, what kind of soap was in the house. He also set the rule really early on. No pets in my life. He was like setting all these rules everywhere. And I didn't realize that until afterwards I stood back and looked at it and thought, wow, I gave up a lot. In fact, my kids just recently was sharing with me, it was Tara. Tara asked in one of the last podcast episodes on her last one, how much have I changed? And I said, I don't really know. She says, you should ask your sons. Ask them, how much have you changed? So one of them told me this terrible story. I'm going to get teary telling you that. He said he got into trouble at college and he needed advice. And he said, I thought of dad, but dad was gone. Dad was dead. So I couldn't call dad. And he said, and I never even thought of you. It was as if you didn't exist. And he was crying, telling me it was like you were ephemeral, like ghost-like, and you didn't even cross my mind. He said, today, you'd be the first person I called.
Well, that's a real demonstration of the change, right?
Yeah. But to hear that I became invisible, ghost-like, that even my own children's sense of me was, she isn't here anymore. She's been swallowed up by something. Mm-hmm. So no, I didn't know I was being controlled, but people around me could feel my lack of solidness in the world. I wasn't present. Me as a person wasn't present.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I remember the moment that it occurred to me that I was being controlled. Like it was a conversation with a friend of mine who asked me when he left, what do you feel? Like in a word, quick, gun to your head, what would you say? Just in one word. And I said, relief. And I knew that. I absolutely felt it. She was asking me, you know, because I hadn't shared with my friends and family really what was going on. I was all about protecting him, but protecting my reputation, like not wanting people to know that I was in a bad relationship. And I don't remember how she and I got on this specific topic, but I said something about like, now that he's gone, you know, I opened the curtains in my bedroom. There's sunlight in my bedroom. And she was like, what are you talking about? Like, wait, you didn't open them before? No, he slept all day. No, they were closed. The curtains, I had blackout curtains and they were always closed because the truth is that he would sleep all day. And then by the time evening came, he gets up and goes to work. It's dark outside. So I never opened the curtains. There was no point. My bedroom was dark and just that feeling of like opening the curtain and having sunlight pour into my bedroom, but my freedom to be able to do that, because if I had opened the curtains before, you know, in fairness, he's sleeping. So kind of a rude thing to do on my part, but I would argue it's rude to sleep all day. And for clarity, he wasn't working all night, right? He got off at 11, 12 a.m. Feel free to sleep until 10, 11, but I'm talking like 1:30, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I couldn't enjoy my own space ever.
It is amazing how this happens and it's incremental. I once likened it to living in poison monoxide. It's invisible. You can't smell it. You can't taste it, but it's killing you. And I think the course of control, it often starts like that. It may not stay like that, but at least in the beginning, it's usually you're just trying to help out or you want to keep them happy. Or life just goes easier because it goes their way. You don't realize that you're giving up your way of life. You're giving up you. Because one of the things I heard recently is I've been doing a lot of continuing education on narcissistic abuse is that the narcissist's instability at their core is such that they don't know how to handle all the parts of themselves that they don't like or know how to deal with. So what they do is they offload it to everyone around them. They basically are guttering you of you and replacing it with the parts they hope will happen, also the parts that they hate about themselves, the parts that they don't know how to handle very well. They're offloading it and then pushing it out into you or into the relationship. So it can create this sense of emptiness in ourselves. I felt as if I was being emptied out. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
You and I both said we didn't recognize it. So how can somebody begin to recognize that maybe this is happening to them?
I wish I'd had these resources when I was going through it.
You know, but big question, right?
I mean, I think listening to the stories of other survivors, even in what you and I are talking about, these little examples, if you either resonate with these examples or you are watching videos and reading books and seeing other content on how other people feel like they're losing themselves, when you feel that, like, do you feel like you need to ask permission? Because even I felt like I had a budget for things and I was the breadwinner. And there was no need for me to feel like I couldn't go to Starbucks, but I felt like I couldn't. And so sometimes I would buy a gift card for Starbucks so that he couldn't pay attention to it. He wouldn't see it. Are you finding yourself changing your behavior? Are you a person who, when you shop for yourself, hides the clothes and then like runs into the house when he's not paying attention and rips all the tags off and hangs them all and acts like that you always had them? You're being controlled. If you don't feel like you can just go to dinner and keep your phone in your bag and everything's taken care of, you might be being controlled. It's when you feel like you need to ask permission, not a regular sort of like check-in, like just letting you know, I'm going to go for dinner with Kim soon. When do you think would be good? Is this weekend okay? Normal relationship kind of checking in, but is it okay? Could I please go for dinner with Kim on Friday? And I promise I'll be home by 11. What are you, a teenager? If you start to feel like you're reporting into mommy or daddy, you're being controlled.
Here's a way I found that I did it, is that when I got off phone calls, I would give him a synopsis of the phone call. Ugh. Yeah, because I knew that if I didn't, he might then read things into it that would be wrong. And I didn't want to create the chaos or the disruption or the argument with him assuming things that weren't true. So I'd say, oh, that's so-and-so, and they're looking for such and such, and this is what we decided to do. I'm thinking, why am I doing this? Again, I'm not a teenager reporting to mom, getting permission to go over to a neighbor's house. But I felt like I had to give all this insight into what's going on in my life. Or if I made a trip, or even if I went grocery shopping, I would come home and talk about what I bought and how much I spent. It's like I had to like keep him in the loop, because I knew if I didn't and he made the wrong assumption, life would get difficult.
Yeah.
So I didn't do that.
Yeah, it's really hard to pick up on those things. I think over time, we become kind of accustomed to it. And honestly, an abuser will sort of pitch this as like, I'm just checking up on you. I'm just making sure you're safe. I'm just making sure you got home okay. I'm just making sure we don't spend too much. I care about you. And when it's positioned as an act of care, we may not see it as control. So it becomes this normal thing in your life. And it's just not normal, right? We start to rationalize the abuser's behavior.
Another one I did is I wouldn't take phone calls outside of the room with him. I would only take phone calls inside the room. So what I would do, or around him. So what I would do is I just stopped contacting people. It isolated me, because what he would say is somebody is in my life that he thought might be influential. He'll say, that's making my acting out behavior worse. It's a negatively impacting me. I'm feeling threatened. And so then I would just stop contacting that person, because God forbid, I didn't want him acting out more. I didn't want him cheating more on me. So I would just drop that relationship because it kept me safer. Yeah. So I think the other thing to recognize, and this is a real hard one, you have to be super honest with yourself, which I know it's not always easy, because self-reflection is really a lot of work. But to say, do I feel like I can be freely myself and even do things at times that requires my partner to sacrifice something on my behalf? Mm. Are they willing to expend that kind of effort for me? Controlling people generally aren't. Or if they do, they do it in such a way that it's like this big celebration. Look what I did, this one thing I did for you. And they'll make it a like, look at me, how big I am and how great I am for letting you do that one thing. But normally they don't. But when they do, it's a big hoopla because they did. So that's another one. It's just, how do you feel? Are you contracting, getting smaller? Mm-hmm. Or do you feel like you're free to be yourself? Mm-hmm. Anything else that you can think of that you, because we all know the big ones. The big ones like, are you able to carry the checkbook? Do you have access to the account? Do you know which money is in there? Is both of your money going into the same account? What is it being spent fairly? What's happening to your sleep and around your diet? I mean, these are kind of more notorious ones. But I think the subtle ones, like you and I, we're talking about really subtle things. They're harder to pick up on.
But I think that's the important part. the subtle ones, because we all know that if you don't have access to your bank account, you might feel controlled. That's possibly even leaning more toward actual control if you really have no access to it. But it's, you do have access. You have your own bank account, but they're controlling other things. It's, how do you feel about your own autonomy and independence? Like you said, do you feel like you can just freely be yourself, do what you want? Do you feel free in this relationship, or do you feel trapped and kind of overwhelmed or stuck, or every move you make, you're kind of like, well, what's he or she going to say? Let me just map out what the possible next things could be, that what could make this a problem? If you're always having to think about their emotions, their reactions, not that they yell, but just kind of, how do I evade consequences? If you feel like you have consequences in a relationship for your behavior that any grown adult would have, that's a problem.
Yeah, I even thought of another example. In my first relationship, my first marriage, I had a colleague, a male colleague that I worked with, and he and I would go out to lunch, and I would say to Brad, hey, I saw Mike today for lunch, and it was really good. Hey, like, what do you guys talk about? It was like, no big deal. Easy going, Brad knew there was no threat at all. But if I even had a business call with a man when I was living with my ex, what's that about? Do you think I'd like that? How come you're talking to them? You know, that's never, you would never have that kind of rule for me. And so I knew I didn't dare have any male relationships in my life. Even totally, you know, people were never on my radar, would never have been allowed in my life because they were seen as a threat. So if you feel like you got to constantly, like you just said, monitor everything, run it past yourself, saying, what kind of consequences? How is this going to upset thing at home? Chances are you're being controlled.
Yeah. Even with family, I see, you know, like, your mom hates me. I don't know why we have to go to her house. There's some coercive control in there because there's a consequence of them being upset, or you know that they're going to be uncomfortable. Yep. So it's just easier to just not go. Yeah, I think also too, on kind of to piggyback on what you were talking about, it sounds like he was jealous. What you described could be called jealousy. But A, jealousy is bad. That level of jealousy where it because you can say, I feel jealous, and then you can deal with that emotion from your partner rather than I feel jealous, so you can't go. That's where it leads into the controlling side of things.
Right.
But you're allowed to have the call with the business associate who's a man, but there's stonewalling that happens after or some kind of punishment. Like, again, that's control.
Exactly.
But don't let it be masked with concern and care and jealousy or insecurity. People can have those feelings and not use those feelings as a weapon to control you.
So Lisa, we're going to jump over to do the podcast extra. I'm super excited about it because I thought of an angle of course of control that we didn't touch on that I really want to get into. And that's the difference between marital coercion and course of control and how those two can look the same but are occurring for very, very different reasons. So I hope people will join us over there as a subscriber to hear more about this on the podcast extra. Well, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Are you following me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Find me at Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And whether you're in, consider leaving, or have left a narcissistic relationship, find community support at my Toxic Free Relationship Club. You can learn about this resource as well as others at CarrieMcAvoyPhD.com. And I'll see you back here next week.